Welcome to another episode of the Tomahawk Take Podcast. This is Alan Carpenter, one of the co-editors, and with me is senior writer Fred Owens.
Good evening.
And you'll note that we're missing Jake because he's off hopefully expanding his family in the next couple of days here. So congratulations to the Mastriones, and hopefully all goes well with that. But we'll look forward to seeing Jake sometime in the future as a new daddy again. So we'll move on and see what we can do with this podcast with just the two of us. Starting today, we actually lost a member of the family, the greater Braves family. Then we had just missed that last week when we had recorded the day before Hank Aaron passed away. And we just want to take a moment. There's been a lot of people writing a lot of things about Aaron and his legacy and what he has meant to the Braves, to baseball. And I just want to get a few words in here to add to that. Not that we're particularly eloquent about this, but we do need to talk about one of the giants of the sport and how he has, what he has meant to the game. And Fred, let me go ahead and start with you with that and see what you have to remember about Aaron. And for y'all out there, Aaron was really kind of in our generation, or at least pretty close to that. So we actually got to see him play. There's a lot of folks out there that never did, and let me tell you, you missed something. If you have a chance to go back and look at some old highlights and such of Braves games from years past, Aaron was definitely a special player, and that's what we want to talk about right now. So go ahead, Fred, see what was.
I grew up back when there was only 8 teams and there was no ball games west of St. Louis. Okay. So that's how old I am. And my dad was a Cubs fan. I grew up in Illinois, Cubs fan. That was my dad's team. I never understood why they couldn't win, but it was baseball I got to listen to. And so Ernie Banks was my guy. And, Ernie Banks and later Billy Williams joined on. Banks and Williams were my guys. And when Ernie Banks died a couple of years back, I teared up watching the funeral. I knew what he meant to baseball. He was the gentleman. He was that player. He was voted the MVP on a team that was in the last place. And he was that guy. And when the Braves came to town and played with Aaron, Covington, Adcock, Matthews, Shane Deanst, Logan, Crandall, Spahn, Burdett, and Buell, the Cubs were in trouble. It was just, there was nothing to it. Hank Aaron beat them like a drum. Between Aaron and Matthews, they beat the Cubs like a drum. It was just, it was painful to watch. And yet, my father, a Cubs fan, since he could speak back in the 1920s, the 19-teens and 1920s, loved watching the Braves play, listening to the Braves play. And when I watched the 57 World Series, yes, I am that old, and I watched Burdett win the 3 games and Aaron and the home runs, and then you get to see him. They started playing the home run derby thing on television where they bring in Mantle 1 week and Mays 1 week, and they would do this. And Aaron won it 1 year. And just listening to him speak after he won, you could tell this was a gentleman. He was a nice man, inside out a nice man who suffered a lot. We found out later. I didn't know as a kid because I was too stupid at the time. But we found out later how much he suffered of that, but he never showed that. Above it all, Hank smiled, played the game hard, wanted to win, overcame all of that. And then as I got older and smarter and watched him play more, I learned how quick his hands were. And, you know, I was going down a list of things. He leads baseball in total bases all time. Total bases. That's almost an incredible, incredible thing to think about. If you take away all 755 home runs, he still ranks 20th on the all-time hit list. He's got between home runs, he leads baseball all time in extra base hits, home runs, doubles, and triples. He leads extra base hits all time. All these things, never more than 44 home runs a year, but for 20 years, never less than 20. No one else is close to doing that. Williams did it 16 years. Maybe would have done it more had the war not been there, but nobody but Hank did it for 20 years. Consistently, a great hitter. not a slugger, didn't strike out, walked more times than he struck out in his career. But when you put all that aside and you look at what he meant to Milwaukee and to eventually to Atlanta and to baseball as a whole, as a person who rose above all of the pain and the hate and the death threats to become the home run leader. And I wrote somewhere else that he's still the man who's hit the most home runs without a needle sticking out of his butt. Aaron was a great man. And he didn't say a thing when Bonds took the home run lead. He said, well, I'm glad he hit his home runs. Congratulations. He could have been a lot worse than that, but Hank was a gentleman and never did that. So for me, when I heard the news about Hank, I told these guys I was going to write something, and I can't. I've yet to be able to put anything on paper, because when I start to write, it turns into something that I just can't finish. I didn't watch the service because I didn't want to tear up. It was very personal to me, because I grew up with Aaron and Banks and Mays and those guys, and when you watch I watched the All-Star game with Roberto Clemente, Willie Mays, and Hank Aaron in the outfield for 13 innings. That's a pretty good outfield. And that's why the National League didn't lose any of those games back then. So you look around and you say, man, what a shame. But at the same time, what a career and what a man and what a gentleman just a great individual.
Let me put a footnote on the total bases thing, because that's actually one of my favorite stats about Aaron, and it's just in terms of the sheer volume there. He not only had more total bases than anybody else, but when you compare him to Babe Ruth, I mean, Babe Ruth was a slugger. We know that. But Aaron had over 1,100 total bases more than Ruth did. Because he was an all-around player. He hit it all over the ballpark. He had doubles. He had triples. You know, just everything was complete about his game. If you add up all the times that, you know, every total base represents 90 feet run. So he had 6,856 total bases. That translates to 116.9 miles of running around the bases. And only 51 of and a half of those miles were for because of home runs. It's just uncanny the kinds of numbers there were. Another favorite quote I have of the tributes that were being made last week came from Chipper, and Chipper said, "Yeah, I'm a Hall of Famer, but I look at Aaron's numbers. He's like doubled everything I did. It's just that much above everybody else." I didn't see Aaron in person but a couple times in terms of gameplay when I was growing up. One was at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. It was probably about 1973 or so, a summer game against the Mets is about all I can remember at that age. But the other was in my hometown of Orlando at Tinker Field for a spring training game against the Minnesota Twins. That was interesting because that had Harmon Killebrew's twins on the other side, and I had never seen Tinker Field so packed. It was absolutely mobbed out there, probably 6,000-8,000 people, and it really only held about 5,000. So it was certainly a big thing. The thing I remember about Aaron's at bats were that he skied the ball to the infield twice. And in both cases, the Twins were confused on the defense. Nobody took charge, and he ended up with doubles because the ball found the grass in the infield after these monster pop-ups. So that was my first-hand look at Henry Aaron. But certainly one of the things I've been thinking about is about the pioneer nature of him. We talk about Jackie Robinson. In fact, he was the one who was the pioneer for African Americans in baseball, and he had to endure the most hate, the most vitriol, the most of everything that went with that. But I mean, Hank Aaron was part of that next group or so. He was close to 10 years after Robinson, but still he, Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, Billy Williams, you mentioned, a lot of those guys came along And they had a different role to play. Yeah, they still endured some of that racism, a lot of that racism. But what they also had to do was what they did. They had to be very good at their craft. Because if they weren't, then I think the racism would have taken hold and everybody would have said, well, you know, African Americans can't play baseball, so you might as well just not even hire them. Well, they hired them because they were very, very good. And I think that was part of Aaron's legacy, is he was the one who helped anchor Africans Americans in baseball in that sport, and helped teams like the Atlanta Braves hire lots of others. Dusty Baker, Rico Carty, Ralph Garr among them. A lot of these guys I don't know if would have had a chance except for guys like Aaron, who played the sport at a exceptionally high level. And that's something I don't know that he gets enough credit for. It may be that things would have happened that way naturally, but I don't know that that's the case. The disappointment is that we're losing these athletes to other sports like basketball and football now, and baseball has from a peak of about 16 to 18% African American participation at one point, we're dropped down to somewhere around close to 5 to 7% now. It depends year to year what you got, but it's a significant drop off that's happened. And that's unfortunate, because I think we would certainly benefit with a lot of these athletes and the sport would be better for it. And I wish we could get more of their participation. That's what the Atlanta Braves have set as a goal for the Henry Aaron Fund that they just set up this week and donated to. And I hope that it's useful for the sport and useful for Black America. So that's the things that running through my head about Aaron since what we've seen last week. And it's just heartening to see the outpouring of support and tributes that were well deserved. And he is clearly a giant in sport, the Atlanta Brave, the Milwaukee Brave, that has deserved that and earned it. And glad to see that it's happened. So now let's turn to more recent news. Well, let's see. The Braves signed a utility infielder. Woohoo. And the only other news this week, roughly, is that Leo Mazzoni is now a member of the Braves Hall of Fame. I don't know why it took him so long. I don't know why guys like Joe Simpson were before him. But at least he's finally getting his due and recognition for being the pitching coach he was for the Atlanta Braves for so long during that big run during the 1990s. And I'm just glad to see that happen. He certainly was a guy who is counter to the norm, I guess. He's definitely old school. He definitely likes to have his pitchers work. And he had a definite idea about how he wanted them to work. And it certainly worked for the Atlanta Braves. His ideas have been sort of set aside, and I think that's unfortunate in the modern last 20 years or so of the sport. But, Fred, tell me what you think and remember about Leo Mazzoni.
Well, the first thing I thought was, it's about damn time. That's the first thing that came to my mind, because, in fact, 6 years ago, I wrote something for the take that said, why isn't Leo in the Hall of Fame? In between that time, I mean, that year they inducted Rabbit Marambil. Now, I like Rabbit Marambil. I'm glad he's in the Braves Hall of Fame, and I'm glad that his family was there. I have no problem with them doing that. And then in between, they inducted a trainer, and I had to look him up. I don't know who he was. And we said Joe Simpson, and then Don Sutton. And I love Don Sutton, but, gee, the guy was the best pitching coach in the major leagues for 15, 20 years nearly. And you wait until 2021 to he's actually, they say, well, this is the last member of the team, the team with the streak to go in the Hall of Fame. And then 6 years later, you decide to induct Leo. And there's something wrong with that. And I asked the question. I went to Atlanta. I talked to all kinds of people who knew or should have known. And all I got was, well, I don't know. And there's something there. There was something there clearly. I don't know whether it was leaving and going to Baltimore, but, you know, he said it was the biggest mistake of his life, but he was doing it because he made a promise to a man. And I have to respect that. I mean, if you're a man enough to say, look, I made this promise to you and I'm going to do it, because that's who I am. And I just don't know why it was taking him so long, but he spent 18 seasons in the minor leagues. He played for the Amarillo Braves, the Decatur Braves, the Bedford Braves, the Monty Braves, the Birmingham Braves, the Tucson Braves, but never the Atlanta Braves. He worked with Johnny Sane or learned his techniques from Sane, and Sane taught him everything about pitching and managing. And, you know, you've seen Leo in interviews this week, and he always said, look, in my day, we wanted people to work. We wanted them to be strong. We wanted them to throw them twice between rotations because we were in a five-man rotation instead of before. Now they want people to come out and throw hard and all the time, and they're blowing their arms out, and they're going to do that because the arm is not made to do that. You can find out the post is still out there if you want to read it. It's called Why Isn't Leo in the Hall of Fame, from like I said, 6 years ago. It's got all that in though. I'm just glad that Leo's alive to get in, because so many times Halls of Fame grab a guy and say, oh my God, Joe Bagadonis died over here and he was a great guy. Let's put him in the Hall of Fame. And he isn't here to appreciate it. But, the great Leo Mazzoni, the pitching coach to the Studs, manager or assist pitching coach to the Hall of Fame manager, three Hall of Fame pitchers out of his rotation. You took broken pitchers, fixed them, sent them back out, and they pitched better when they left the Braves. It wasn't just a bubble when they were with the Braves. They went out and pitched better after he fixed them than they did before. So, you know, that's how you tell the pitching coaches doing his job. During the streak, if you go back and think about the streak, who was the closer? Greg McMichael? Sorry, I like Greg. Jarrett Wright. 14 different guys, 14 different pitchers recorded seasons of 19 and 20 saves during the streak. 14 different people were closers in that, and they never really had a closer. When they went out and got one, it didn't work. But Leo got them guys through the games and got them to the postseason and gave them the chance to win. And Bobby will tell you that he couldn't have done it without Leo, and I just think it's about damn time.
I think you're right. I have no doubt about that. I mean, you make the point about enjoying the Hall of Fame and enjoying the recognition. And at least Hank Aaron had 38 years, which he had been in the Cooperstown Hall of Fame. And so he's had that and effectively became the king of the Hall of Fame as well, because he was that guy that that made everybody sit up and take notice whenever he entered the room. And hopefully Leo Mazzoni will have a chance to have at least a few years of recognition in this generation of the kinds of things that he accomplished as an Atlanta Brave pitching coach. As you're right. I mean, he got guys that went to the post every day. They did their work. They did their thing. They pitched 200 plus innings. He saw them through the transition between four man and five man rotations, and he kept them healthy for a ton of years. And they hardly ever broke down. John Smoltz was probably the only one who really truly broke down. I guess
he did
Steve
it after
Avery
2000.
Did as well.
It was 2000 innings in before John broke. 2000 yeah. innings before he had to have surgery. The whole concept of Henry Aaron hired him as pitching coach, by the way, and made him the pitching coach for, he asked Leo, they sent Leo, this story, this has been on the web, you've probably seen it, but they sent they optioned or sent eight players to the team Leo was managing, and like five of them were pitchers or six of them were pitchers. And he turned them all around and sent them back, and they all pitched well. And Aaron called him and said, "We'd like you to come to Florida and look at our and evaluate some of our pitchers." He did that. He had lunch with Henry on the way down there. He did that, and he said, "Okay, now we want you to take over pitching development for the Braves." And Aaron put him in the job. And when it came to moving to Atlanta to go to work for Bobby Cox, it was Aaron in putting his name up for it and saying, Leo's pitchers don't get hurt. Leo's pitchers pitch. They don't get hurt. He keeps his pitchers strong. And Henry's the reason Leo got the job with Bobby. And he's been very vocal about that all week. I hope Henry knew that before he passed that Leo was going in. But this was one of the greats of the game. And they talk about Dave Duncan, but you know, Leo Mazzoni was better than Dave Duncan. I don't know of a pitching. Maybe Cooper in Chicago was close, but he's the best. I'm really old. I've said before, he's the best pitching coach I've ever seen on a team. And I don't know why people don't listen to him anymore. I don't know. Maybe he stole their underwear out of the locker room and flew up the flagpole. I don't know. But whatever it is, forget that. He was a great, great pitching coach, and he deserved it.
Well, let's move to the last topic, which is the one I didn't really want to do because it's the annoying one, which is here we are, January 28th as we record this, and we're still waiting on the Braves to do a backup catcher. We're still waiting on a couple of guys for the bullpen. We're still waiting on a left fielder, and there's just a whole lot of holes there and not much is going on. We've heard some rumors about some guys becoming available, though we don't have any connection to the Braves necessarily. Guys like Jock Peterson.
Sorry, he's now a Cub.
Adam Frazier of Pittsburgh. Trey Mancini of the Orioles. At this point, we've gotten most of the hitters, the real hitters, off of the free agent list. George Springer is gone. Michael Brantley's gone. JT Realmuto's gone. Even though there was mutual interest said to be between the Braves and Realmuto, apparently that wasn't enough to persuade the Braves to go the extra mile and just sign a guy that only cost money. So at this point, we've got Marcell Ozuna still hanging around there. And not much else unless you go really deep into a trade that probably isn't going to happen because, well, as Dave O'Brien suggested, giving up top prospects, multiple top prospects to do a significant trade just isn't the part of the modus operandi of the Braves at this point. So I don't know where we go from here. You got any ideas, Fred? Because I'm about out of them. happening here.
Yeah, I looked at this a couple of times. I put the post up there about the budget payroll post up last week. And, you know, there are ways to work that around and in a league without the DH, you're going to need two hitters because you have two big holes in the lineup. You have three actually, and you're going to have to fill two of those somehow. And we all assume Pache is going to start in center field. So if that's good, then you have to find two more hitters somewhere. Maybe Pache comes in and hits 260. I don't know. That's good.
Yeah, even if he doesn't start in center field, then you've got Enciarte, and you have no idea what he's going to do hitting either.
Yeah, right now, Enciarte is your starting left fielder, and Almonte is your bench outfielder. That doesn't work, friends. I said this in the post, you can go out and hire a platoon. You can pay Jock Peterson $8 million or $9 million, and you can pay Duvall $7 or somebody else, Eddie Rosario $7, and you can flip out a right-left outfield out there, but only one of those bats play at the time. So you're still a bat short in the lineup unless you believe Austin Riley is going to flip the switch and be the 35 home run guy everyone wants him to be. I, like Austin, I would hope he does that. I just don't believe it yet. And he hasn't done anything to make me believe it. So you start looking around for these players. You know, Trey Mancini is a great guy, right-handed bat. We have one left-handed bat in the lineup, and that's Freeman right now. And you've got all these big right-handed pitchers out there. You want a left-handed bat, you're getting skinnier and skinnier. You're down Eddie Rosario, Jock Peterson, maybe I talked about Gregory Polanco, Andrew Benintendi. That's really what's out there, and there's not much else going on. Somebody said that Bauer was going to the Dodgers. I saw that little thing flip by. Somebody told me that Bauer was going to go to the Dodgers. If that's true, and it could easily be because they have a bucket load of money, they would bust the second surcharge on the payroll this year, which might make them decide to unload somebody like Max Muncy and play Gavin Lux instead. But even if you do that, are they going to trade him to the Braves? I don't know. Somebody said they wouldn't do that. We're a competitor. I don't think they worry about competitors. I think they just worry about themselves. But in any case, you're starting to look like there's nothing left. You bring in Marcell Ozuna, and I know he had a great 60 games, but he was worse in defense than the Braves expected him to be, and that's why he DH'd for all but four of those games. And that's why he's not back on the books now, I believe. He's going to be a defensive liability in the outfield. And if you play him with the intent of removing him in the late innings for defense, what happens when you need his bat and Ender Inciarte comes up to take the place? There's a problem there. And the problem is the way the roster is constructed. And I don't know how they fix it this sort of time. There just isn't any answer that we haven't beat to death yet. Unless somebody knows something we don't know here. I mean, I don't know who else is trading anything, but I've looked around the league. We've talked about Nick Castellanos. We've talked about Chris Bryant. We've talked about Arenado. We've talked about everybody that's out there that could possibly be moved. And yet we're here less than a month from pitchers and catchers reporting, and we got what the little boy shot at.
Yeah, even with guys like Chris Bryant, I've heard this week that the Cubs have basically told him that he could expect to be a Cub this year because it sounds like there's no traction that's happening at all or momentum at all trying to trade him. So I think he's probably off the table. I hear that the Rockies are starting to listen on Nolan Arenado, but does anybody really expect the Braves to step up on that one? I don't think that's going to happen if you haven't taken the steps to try and get some of these other big free agents. You could have done that easily with the money we're talking about for Arenado. If you're going to give Ozuna a contract now, what are you going to do? Is that a 4-year thing? Is it a 3-year thing? If you were going to do either one of those, why didn't you go the extra mile to do that for George Springer or perhaps the JT Realmuto? All these kinds of things keep letting me think that perhaps the Braves are just kind of waiting around to let things happen to them and not going out to target anybody, or they just don't find anybody palatable on the market. And if that's the case, then you've got one other option. It's a trade. And so far, it looks like you're going to have to overpay for somebody to get somebody. And that I can't see that happening so far. So I really am a little bit flummoxed as to what the plan is, or if there's a plan, and or where they go from here. Because right now, it's looking like other teams are driving the action, but the Braves are just sort of sitting around waiting on something to happen for them. And it's not don't come into fruition for them. So I don't know that I like what I'm seeing, but certainly the action is not happening. And here we are 3 weeks now away from spring training starting, and we've got all these holes. They can't even find a backup catcher, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I was about to point out that we can't even hire a backup catcher. Or say, you know, well, we don't need one. Ajax is going to be the backup catcher. I'm fine. I mean, you know, if you want to put Ajax or Contreras in that hole, let's do that. But let's, you know, the fans are out here and they're expecting the team that damn near went to the World Series to do something. And they look around and the other teams are doing something. And it looks so much like Alex is waiting to see who's out of a job. And that is not the way, in my opinion, that's not the way to run an airline. You don't wait to see which last pilot isn't hired before you put him on the plane. You've got two major holes. If you want to win, you've got to do it. Now, the flip side of this is the prospects are out today. We've still got the same four in the top 100 that were there at the end of last year. But two of those are going to graduate this year in Anderson and Pache. And you're going to be left with Waters and Langeliers, or Langeliers, however he is, but the catcher.
Langeliers, I don't know.
Langeliers, whatever.
Shane,
we're going to have got Shane. We got Shane down there. So you're left with those two guys, and then you're left with a bunch of players who are 50 and 45 value players. They're, you know, maybe everyday guys, maybe they're depth, but you don't have anybody to move the needle when you go for a big trade. So if you want to trade for a big trade, if you want to make a trade for the Arenado or for some, if you want to make a trade for someone like a Betts or an Arenado or a Bregman or somebody, a name, you got to have something that moves the needle. And unless that's Waters, right now, or the catcher, Langeliers, unless it's one of those guys, you've got nothing. It's like, You go down to shop, and you've got a dime in your pocket, and everything costs a dollar. It just seems to me like I just don't think it's going to work very well, and I'm concerned about that because you've got a core of Freeman and Albies and Acuna and Swanson. You got this core of players there and these pitchers and Anderson and Soroka and Freed. You've got all this there. You've got the nuts and bolts. And what you need now is to stick an engine on the outside to give Freeman somebody to lean on so they don't have to pitch around him. And they got nothing.
This was one of the arguments I was making with Realmuto. Now, whether you believe he's the guy who moves that needle or it provides the protection notwithstanding, because I can see arguments on both sides there, if you went out and got him, if you went out and got a five-year deal to sign Realmuto and you brought him on board, then what does that do? That frees up, because if they're blocked, Ajax, Contreras, Langeliers, they now become part of the trade bait possibilities that you could use to land one of these premium guys that we're talking about that would be for left field or someplace else. These are the guys that would move the needle for a trade. You free up those guys because Realmuto would block them for 5 years. You wouldn't be able to use them for anything else, except maybe backup purposes, and that's not where they'd be best. It'd be best to use those as trade. Now, you could now use the same argument for getting a left fielder and trading Waters, and because that's the kind of thing that would need to be done. You've still got a supply of AAA pitchers that we can't seem to get to the major league level, whether it's Tukey, Bryce Wilson, Kyle Wright, Mueller, or any of these other guys that we've seen get cups of coffee in the majors. You've got them kind of hanging around, but at this point, are they really worth it? And that's why I think the Braves have hung on to them a little bit too long and not used them in a way that would be useful for the team in the long term. And beyond that, yeah, the farm system's getting thin quickly, and I don't see any way that we're trying to replenish anything. If you could, dump somebody for a couple of prospects that have some at least decent upside, that would at least move the needle a little bit there. But we haven't seen any trades like that so far either. So there's a lot of things that are going on, well, not going on really, that are. I think going to cost the Braves in the next several years. We had been used to having a top five or top three farm system for a while. Well, that's slipped down to about 10th now, maybe on some lists. And I think that's going to continue to slip even further as the next couple of years go by. So We've got precious few resources to use for trade. We've got precious few days left before the start of spring trading, and we still got some major holes and just don't see anything going on overtly that is going to stop that. And that's the problem right now. And that's unfortunately the way we are here. We're reacting. We're not acting. And that's my concern.
Just saw a tweet from Rosenthal that said that Rob Manfred and Deputy Commissioner Dan Halem spoke today with Union Rep Tony Clark and Negotiator Bruce Meyer. Exact subjects not known or covered were not known, but health and safety protocols were likely discussed since the club medical staffs are still waiting on them. Now, based on that and based on that meeting, that's probably true because this on the news recently we've been picking up this new strains of the virus coming in. And they're not sure whether how the shots are going to take the vaccines are going to take it, how the vaccines are going to work for it. So if there's and they're probably worried about this right now because they're not going to get the people vaccinated until in the summer. And if there's new strains of the vaccine, the virus out there, and the vaccine it's effective, but it's not as effective as it is against the previous strains, the South African strain, there's a Brazilian strain and a UK strain. And actually here in the States, there's probably different strains that have spun off from the virus here because the virus is a constantly evolving, living thing. So, you know, they say it's a South African strain, but it may have just spun off here and looked like the one in South Africa. So you don't know exactly, but the problem is, that they just still don't have the health and safety protocols for the season that's going to start in 2 months done. I think a lot of that's done politically because coming out of Washington, we don't know what they're going to do. And some of these states are in, and, you know, you wrote a couple weeks ago, but the states don't really have any idea what's going on. We had the letter from the Cactus League last week that said, hey, we want to hold off the start of that. But the union saying, no, we're going to play. And, they did have, as I understand it, they had an exercise, a tabletop exercise in Phoenix, with the teams from the Cactus League out there, who were in a round table discussion of what would happen, a sort of a tabletop mass disaster exercise. It's not exactly that, but that's what they were doing. Okay, this happens. How do we manage this disaster, this epidemic, keep it from getting worse? So if you're in that kind of planning mode and, you don't have your health and safety stuff out there yet, that's a problem. Now, on the flip side, somebody may say, well, they may have talked about the DH. Well, I think they're talking about health and safety right now. And I don't think that the DH is going to come up because I think it's not going to happen this year. The health and safety thing, they have to talk about. They have to sit across the table and have a reasonable discussion about, because that's not about money. That's about people's lives. But when it comes to money, both sides are just pigheaded, and I don't know what they're going to do about it. But that just flipped across my screen, so I thought I'd pass that along.
Well, sounds good, because now, as I've been harping on the idea of 3 weeks to spring training, I'm now suddenly wondering, well, do we really have 3 weeks, or do we have 10 weeks or something like that? Because there's nothing etched in stone by any stretch of the imagination, but we're going to have to continue to follow it and see how we go. Says, nothing's certain yet. And I'm just hoping that we get some baseball soon, but that's some interesting news that's coming out of there, because the other sports seem to be doing okay. Football, we got through an entire season with that. The NBA is having a little struggles here, but we'll see how baseball can handle this. Right now, I do know that we've got a delay to the minor league season. They've got to get their own protocols squared away, but right now they're going to take a back seat, of course, to the major league teams and see where that goes. So that's about all we got for this week. Unless Fred's got any final thoughts, I think we can wrap up. Fred?
I've got nothing left out here. I want these two sides to stop fighting over a few dollars. Okay. They're damaging the game. I see that they're, you know, I just don't like them sitting in a corner saying my feet are bigger than your feet. And so I'm going to get bigger shoes than you. I don't like that. And, I think that, you know, when you get in that position, somebody needs to take a step back and be the bigger person here. And I just don't see either side doing that right now. And that bothers me a little bit.
I am in favor of that.
The good news is that they're talking about the health and safety thing, and that is a priority. I think they will start spring training on time unless there's something major happens between then now and then. But the season, I don't think they're confident about the season on either side, and that's just a gut feeling. But it just doesn't seem like it's going to be a quick and easy kind of fix for these folks, and I'm not sure that they understand that.
Well, we'll keep on it. We'll keep watching, keep seeing what might happen one way or another. But hopefully we can at least get the Braves off top dead center and get something going with the with this roster. But other than that, failing to have a guy of a stature of Hank Aaron step up and say, stop it, everybody. Let's behave like adults here and get some things done. We're probably going to end up with the same kinds of things as we've been seeing. So that'll do it for this week. But we'll, like I say, keep on top of things and let you all know what we know when we know it. And otherwise, thanks very much for listening. Appreciate you tuning into the podcast and hope you subscribe to it regularly. And we'll get this out to you as soon as possible. And thanks very much.
This edition of the Tomahawk Tick Podcast, our fourth for 2021, is a production of TomahawkTick.com and Fansided LLC, a subsidiary of Minute Media, Inc. We'll dedicate this one to the memory of Hammerin Hank Aaron. Opinions expressed on the show today are solely those of the participants. Minute Media doesn't claim any of them. All rights reserved. Some of the musical selections used today come to you under the auspices of the Creative Commons license, terms of which are available at creativecommons.org/licenses/by/4.0. These were pieces by Kevin MacLeod entitled Heartwarming and Still Pickin'. His works are featured at incompetech.filmmusic.io. All other selections used come via rights purchased by TomahawkTick.com. Thanks for tuning into the podcast today, and as a final message to Alex Anthopoulos, yes, it's okay to send 8 players to Cleveland for Jose Ramirez. We'd be okay with that. We'll see y'all out for the next inning.